This is the WOKV Ask the Experts Weekend, discussing things that matter most to you. Local experts answering your questions. Call 855-765-1045. That's 855-765-1045. Now, Smart Money on 104.5 WOKV. Here's your host, Hank Madden, Mike Ellis, and Corey Schrader.
Jacksonville, it is Saturday morning live on a, that's a really pretty Saturday morning, but it's a wee bit nippy. Anything below 70 is a considered blizzard as far as I'm concerned.
I would agree.
Anyway, good morning, folks. I'm Hank Madden.
I'm Mike Ellis.
And Corey Schrader.
Yep. Corey Schrader, I thought we had
Corey Adamas.
Corey Adamas.
I think it's...
Yeah, okay. You first-time listeners to the show, you guys and gals, God bless you. Hope you can make it for the full 2 hours. As always, our regular listeners, the foundation upon which we build, numbers ever-growing, God bless you. I am truly so humbled by you every time that I meet you from all walks of life, and I'm just extremely grateful for you. The show, what is it about? Two different things. We're going to bring you up-to-date financial news, but in a little bit different way. We're going to look at you nationally, internationally, and globally. And then we're going to take those events of the day and time and bring them back to you in your home and how they impact you so you can be better prepared to make intelligent, informed decisions. Smart Money also, folks, is a Christian-based radio show. Our firm, Madden Advisory, is a Christian-based firm, and we try to lead and live our principles based upon the gospel of Christ Jesus. I tell you this not to flaunt a religion, but even more important today, we have a nation and at times I believe a world that runs without a moral compass. We need one and need one desperately. Business owners, they need to stand up if they're Christians and let their customers, their clientele know that they have a principle. Our schools need to. The families, most importantly, need to put Christ back in their home again, as well as our government does. So when you see us running around doing the horrible things we do, just think what it would be if we had a moral compass. So we desperately need it. Topics today, we're going to do something a little bit different. I'm going to kind of talk a little bit about it, but I'm going to let the A-team discuss this, and that is the Chicken Little syndrome that is governing decision-making, and I have heard some really irrational comments, but we're going to let that be the topic. The did you knows today are...
So we'll be looking at prior periods of turmoil with epidemics and pandemics.
Okay.
Lovely.
And Corey Adamas has what for us?
So surprisingly, we're going to talk a little bit about the market this week. In case anyone didn't know, stocks suffered their worst weekly decline in over a decade as everyone got even more fearful of the Kung Flu. That's right. So when we look at all the major indexes, everyone fell into a correction territory. What that means is it's down more than 10% from the recent peaks. And actually, it was a week earlier where that was, which was pretty incredible because the S&P 500 recorded its fastest correction in history. All the sectors within the S&P suffered a correction as well.
Wait a minute. That can't be true.
It's true.
No. How about... was October, whatever the heck it was.
I'm getting there. But this is the fastest where it's seen. And the reason behind that is because the market was actually down almost 12% this week, which was absolutely the fastest correction in a week. So
risk velocity, I think I've heard that.
Yeah. And I'm gonna touch a lot about this because I have a lot of numbers, which I think will help calm a lot of people because, you know.
Okay, let's go.
Yeah, I'm working on it. So, again, you know, energy stocks fared the worst, especially with the oil prices, which obviously goes into production. Communication services held the best with some resilience in Netflix shares. And, of course, if you're familiar with the VIX, which measures volatility across options, it spiked near 50 on Friday morning, which is the highest level since global financial crisis in 2008. But we're going to keep talking about it as we move on today.
So for the editorial, that's right, folks. Hank mentioned it. We're going to be talking about the coronavirus. What did you call it, Corey?
It's kung flu.
It's the kung flu and sweet and sour sicken.
All right. So it's been
didn't they make a song about that kung flu something or
kung flu fighting?
That kung flu fighting?
Yeah, kung, there you go.
All right. So, okay. So it's been on our radar since earlier in the year, right? We've talked about it in passing over the last 2 months. So what happened? Up until this week, it looked...
Hank wants to say something.
Oh,
what's
Michael.
Up, Hank?
Yeah.
Michael.
Yes.
Michael.
Yes.
He's listening.
Listen.
I am.
All right. I just want to give a little bit of background real quick.
Bring it.
And then I'm going to be quiet and let you guys run at it, all right? First, let me give you some good news, folks. And that is the U.S. economy has a sturdy foundation. It has low unemployment. It has strong wage growth. And it has robust consumer spending. Now, that's the good news out of this. The real problem with this market happens to be what I would consider, you know, somebody, we had a Democrat call in and say, why am I so hard on the Democrats? It's because they're so damn stupid and so focused on their own achievement and not protecting that of the American people. And this comes from what Pelosi and Schumer did in an opening joint statement. This was a Thursday on the federal coronavirus policy. And they had this line, lives are at stake. This is not a time for name calling or playing politics. Now, as the saying goes, that's interesting if true, but the evidence, folks, of a bipartisan cooperation in response to the virus, it is simply isn't there. And the 48 hours before Pelosi and Schumer called for an end to the name-calling, you had Representative Cortez, who was the most laughing stock of the, well, one of the most, of the Socialist Democrats, mocking Vice President Mike Pence, calling him a science denier, Elizabeth Warren tweeting that the administration's bungled response to the coronavirus outbreak is a mess. Schumer, almost at the same moment he was joining Speaker Pelosi in a plea to stop playing politics, went onto the floor of the Senate to re-rip into Mr. Trump, recycling his towering and dangerous incompetence line. Now, all of this is designed to create mistrust, confusion, and fear. Fear is one of the most powerful emotions that we have to deal with. Yeah, greed's up there, but fear will rip it apart. We have people that could normally look at making rational decisions become insanely fearful. And when confronted with the facts, they can't even hear it. Now, that is what is dangerous to this market. It is not the coronavirus. Businesses will deal with it appropriately. It is what the federal representatives of our government, the Socialist Democratic Party, choose to do to cause you to have fear, worry, angst, and mistrust. Now, I'm going to be quiet, and we're going to let the A-team tell you why that's true. Go for it.
All right. So up until this week, it looked relatively contained in China. Most of the cases remain there, a few sporadic confirmed outside of China, popping up occasionally elsewhere. Some companies started talking about minor disruptions in supply chains due to those issues in China. And then this week, the virus really came rocketing up in everybody's face. And why is that? It's because Italy closed and isolated 10 towns in their northern region, which is also a tactic that China used to fight the spread. So seemingly overnight, the news ignited with nonstop coverage of the virus primed to take over the world and end life as we know it. This, of course, rocked the markets, as Corey alluded to, on Monday and throughout the week. And, of course, that question is there. What the market's asking is, what if more cities are closed and isolated across the globe? What would happen to the world's economies? So with each news update or press release, you see more fear and quiet panic spread wider and wider, which is what Hank's alluding to. That's kind of the undescribed goal. Companies started outright advising they wouldn't hit their projected profit numbers due to this virus. And then the markets the world over have had several days of sharp declines. And the market, S&P 500, closed down about 12% on the week. So goes the million-dollar question for everybody else. What do I do?
Well, can I jump on that real quick?
Yep.
So to keep all this in perspective, if you look at the one-year numbers just on everything, so the S&P 500 is still up 5% year over year.
Yep.
And the NASDAQ's still up 13%. And the Dow is basically down 2%. So it's one of those things where you look at what happened last year. The market, when we were going to raise interest rates, it dropped 20% within 2 months. And again, we lost 12% this week, but really the market's only down 16%. So we're still not even touching what we did in 18.
Nope, still far from it. But one of the things that's important to look at, folks, are what are the facts on the ground? One of my battalion commanders said, you can be a pie in the sky all up high as much as you want, but until you're the commander on the ground with the facts in hand, it doesn't matter. So what's actually happening at the ground level? Well, we look at the growth of the virus, and once again, in China, the Friday night figures were 78,961 infections.
Which is still a big number.
Big number, but 36,711 of them are already recovered. That's 46.5%. Not sick anymore.
Did they say how long? Was it a week, 2 weeks?
That was the one thing I could not
talk about. Okay,
nope.
Gotcha.
So 2,791 have unfortunately passed. The virus has claimed them. Outside of China, 51 countries, 4,691 confirmed cases total. 67 claimed. I could not find anything about recoveries there yet.
Gotcha. It's
but
probably
the most
so early.
Recent, the first confirmed cases outside of China weren't that long ago.
Right.
So as a point of comparison, influenza usually infects about 35 to 45 million people per year and usually claims between 35,000 and 61,000 people, and those figures are in the United States alone.
Right. A developed country that actually has the medicine to protect it.
I'm pointing at the fact that this is being way overblown. It's not as big of a spread as influenza, or if you want to look at 1918, the Spanish flu.
Right.
So growth of the virus is slowing in China, as I was talking about earlier. That's one of the facts on the ground. The numbers went from about a few hundred cases per day when it first started coming in, a few thousand new cases per day, and now they're falling back into the low hundreds. Apple came out Friday and reported that some of their factories in China are starting to return to normal output. Mm-hmm. And outside of China, countries with the highest infection rates currently are Korea, Italy, and Iran, in that order. First Friday was the first day that they broke over 1,000 total new infections outside of China.
Yeah.
So the question now really should be, how well can the other developed nations keep the lid on this thing?
Well, it's going to be hard for them too. I mean, to keep everyone contained, it's a 2-week incubation period potentially,
yep,
if not longer. So, the cases that come out will be there. From a market perspective, I mean, they're looking to accommodate as much as possible. I mean, the markets have already factored in that we're going to have a rate cut again, which to me is absolutely just
bonkers, insane. Yep.
Because what's going to happen is we're continuing to spike the pool. It's getting out of control. We're going to drop below 1%, and then it's going to be really hard to make a justification to get above 1%.
Yep. Well, absolutely.
What would happen if we put in a new QE program and started buying back bonds instead and infused cash into the economy? Gee, wouldn't that be nice instead of wasting a rate cut?
Yeah, but it's one of those things. There's already enough money in the system. problem is you have an aging demographic that, honestly, and this is what's feeding into some of this correction, is people feel like enough is enough. Like, I don't want to deal with this anymore. And that's where the emotional, investing comes into play. Like, you know, you're not investing for the next 5 to 10 years. You're investing for 15, 20, so you don't have to run out of money when you have medical issues or your next generation or whatever it is.
Yep. Well, let's take a quick look, though, as far as, hey, you know, can we keep the lid on this thing? So the United States has 59 infections total. Most of them were actually brought back to the United States on purpose from the cruise ship and straight out of China so we could start studying this thing. So several large names in the medical industry at this point are spending countless hours and dollars in the race towards an antiviral.
That's one of my quizzes
for
the day.
I stole it. So Wednesday, the National Institute of Health.
Hey, nice guys.
Wednesday, the National Institutes of Health started a human trial on the first antiviral to fight coronavirus, and that was at the University of Nebraska. And the first case was reported on January 15th, which means in about a month and a half, we're already in human trials on an antiviral.
Yep. And there's a couple of stocks out there that are in the biotechnology space that are just, and I've heard it, you know, from different folks throughout the week hey, who's working on this thing? Who do I need to look at?
So, and so Hank alluded to this. What are the actual economic implications? You know, we just had phase one China trade deal go into place. We just saw the global economic growth start improving after, you know, a slower year last year. So what are the impacts of this going to be? Well, so far, they've been fairly mild. Some of the large market research firms out there that spend hundreds of billions of dollars a year to keep track of things like Chinese spending and travel habits have posted some data, and it does show a pretty steep decline in January. It bottomed out in mid-February, and it's starting to improve now. So we anticipate that trend to continue, right? Improvement. And coronavirus recovery numbers continue to climb, and more companies come forward like Apple did this week and announce that operations are starting to go back to normal. China makes up 20% of the world economy.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're going to end up seeing is you're going to see a lag effect. I mean, I know personally that's affecting us. My wife was supposed to be traveling this week, and they've canceled it. She's not going over to California now because of all these different people from different countries and everything coming in for this conference. So you're going to see a lot of that. People are going to, you know, shore up first, make sure everything's good before they start ramping things up. But as soon as something's figured out, you're going to see not only the market come back, but you're going to see everyone get back to normal once they realize, hey, this really isn't as bad as it was.
Right, exactly. And you know, we're looking at this, and if things really do look like they're starting to slow down as far as the virus spread, the situation's improving in China, and why are we seeing the response we're seeing now in the markets?
Yeah.
You know, that would be the next kind of logical question. Well, what really kicked all of this week off was when Italy started taking some of the same measures as China with a quarantine of entire towns on Monday.
Well,
Sunday.
That
spooked everybody. And once that uncertainty creeps into the market, it's hard to shake it out until there's either, you know, a definitive event to ease the uncertainty or until all the people that can be scared into selling have been.
Yeah, well, I was following, and I do this on a weekly and daily basis, is just the earnings conversations and conferences that these companies have. And I hate to say that they're somewhat perpetuating some of this fear, but every one of them is CYAing in the sense of, hey, yeah, we're seeing a slowdown, or we're going to potentially see a slowdown, whether or not they have any real chance of it slowing down their business. Well, but it's great for their earnings.
Of course. Which would you rather have to step over, a knee-high bar or a chest-high bar?
Hey, I'm not hating them. I'm just saying.
I know.
Like, it just throws, you know, it throws more gasoline on the fire to say, okay, growth is going to slow. Whether or not it's true is another story. So that's where you start looking at, okay, what kind of value plays are out there? What kind of stocks and what kind of just areas do I need to be in?
Well, and I know another one out there is, how long will this downturn last? Well, keep in mind that generally speaking, historically speaking, when you see a sharp downturn, the sharper that downturn is, the sharper the upturn is as well.
You're talking about a V return?
Yeah, I'm talking about a V return.
Baby. Yeah, it was actually funny. So I had bowling last night. I went out to dinner with my in-laws, and my mother-in-law, she looks at me, she goes, yeah, I'm expecting a V return. I'm like,
how do you know that word?
I was like, very impressive, very impressive.
Okay, hey, listen, guys, we're hitting that mystical time way past. body is sitting there shooting daggers. We're going to have to take a information timeout. I will tell you this. I made a few random checks, And if we measure risk by standard deviation, not how much do I want to fear. And when we look at it quantitatively, we're at best, about halfway through what is the standard deviation for most portfolios. But yet you have insane panic decision making on the part of a few. It's totally insane.
Yeah.
So check yourself. Folks, we're going to take an information timeout. You're listening to 104.5 WOKV, Smart Money. We'll be back in just a few. Did you know?
So can you guess what the return of the S&P 500 was amid the Spanish flu pandemic and World War One in 1918?
There was a market back then?
There was. The S&P actually goes back
to
84-year-old cattle and pork bellies.
We'll talk about it after the break. Hey, Jacksonville, welcome back to Smart Money on 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's news and talk. So we ran over real long on our last segment there.
Thanks, Hank.
Well, yep. It is a concerted effort between all of us. So we'd have to go right back out to break. It is the bottom of the hour. Where did the time go? When we come back, lines are open. That's right, folks. Get your financial questions ready because the lines will be open. The show will be yours. The number is 855-765-1045. Once again, that's 855-765-1045. Did we know?
And the answer to the did you know from the previous segment was?
It is. In 1918, amid the Spanish flu pandemic, which killed about 675,000 Americans in World War One, the S&P 500 was down 24.7% and rose 8.9% in 1919. Spanish flu pandemic and all of the other is the pandemic that all other pandemics are measured by today. It's estimated that a third of global population, or 500 million, were infected, and it claimed over 50 million worldwide. And then did you know for the outro, can you guess the S&P 500's performance during and after the HIV outbreak in 1981?
No.
We'll talk about it after the break.
Jacksonville, welcome back to Smart Money. You are listening to 104.5 WOKV. Your lines are open. And did you know?
So, in 2013, during the first 6 months of the HIV outbreak, the S&P 500 was down negative 0.30. And in the 12 months after the HIV case, it was down negative 16.5. And I will give you the caveat, that's the worst of the ones I'll cover today.
Interesting. So,
okay. Let me throw in one thing that Corey O'Damas was saying. I believe it probably to be true, and that is the sharp V recovery. Typically, when you have a sharp decline, you will have a sharp incline. One of the concerns, though, that I have in the various reports I've read is the fact that this is a global issue, that the global economies being affected may influence the rapidity of that increase or the right side of the V. I still think it'll be there as soon as a treatment is announced. Get out of the way.
Yeah, I think also to piggyback on you there, Hank. One of the biggest things is it's like trying to catch a falling knife. You know, trying to time when this thing's going to pop.
I'd rather
back
have
up.
The Democrats do that.
I mean, think of the V as the sharp end of the knife.
Well, actually, so. Diane on the line here actually had a question about the V. So let me go ahead and bring her on.
Sure.
Hey, Diane.
Okay.
Hey,
thank
Diane.
You.
How are you?
It's really fine. How are you?
Great. Wonderful.
Well, I just wanted to really primarily say thank you because I, you know, like many investors, well, I'm retired, and over this past week, seeing a loss of over $400,000 is a little unnerving. You know, I've already got high blood pressure. It went up a little bit. But anyway, but I knew that I was going to go visit my sister today. I'd be in my car for an hour and a half, and I thought, well, I'm going to listen to you guys and see what you guys have to say about the week's events, because I think my opinion is you guys have a really good way, based on your forum, of tag teaming and telling the whole story. You know, I've read a lot in the news. I've, you know, looked at all types of news stations. I've done my own little research, which is probably pretty pitiful. But the point is, you guys have a great way of telling a story, and it's helped me put this whole situation, I think, in a more healthy perspective.
Awesome.
And I really wanted to thank you for that. I like the way you tag team. I think the expertise that you guys have is incredible. And then also, you're not afraid to really tell it like it is and be really upfront with your listeners. So I really wanted to thank you for that. So that's
awesome.
The real reason I called, because I've been a little bit stressed, but I thought, well, I'll listen to you guys on Saturday and see what you have to say.
Well, God bless you, Diane. Thank
yes,
you for
thank
tuning
you for
in
that.
And listening. And, you know, we definitely appreciate the comments. And
okay.
Other than that, you know, if you got any questions, always feel free to give us a call.
No, but thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it. You guys take care.
You too.
Absolutely.
Drive safe.
All right.
Hey, Mike, let me throw something in. I know throughout the week we have been checking various portfolios, and these are random selections. They're not a systematic go-through for everyone. But what we're finding is that the diversification we've had has substantially reduced the impact of the correction to the portfolios. Several are up about a third of, or rather, they're only down about a third year to date.
Yeah.
I'm emphasizing that year to date.
Yep.
Of what the actual correction is. And even if you go from the point of correction to the close of the markets, we're still down a significant percentage less than what the actual market is. Now, that focuses around how you choose to diversify your portfolio. We can never emphasize that enough. Have a plan, follow the plan, stick to it. And right now, people should be trying to find every extra dollar they can to get it into this market. These are one of those golden opportunities.
Well, what happens if, smart aleck, if it doesn't come back? It keeps going down.
Well, then the end of the world. I hope you got beans and bullets, because you're going to be in deep trouble. That simply is not true. That is an emotional response, and you've got to be aware of what you know yourself, know your emotions, and know how many times have those emotions lied to you.
Yeah.
Well, and it's like we always say, you know, do you have that formal written plan for your investments? Do you know what you can reasonably expect to gain or lose from your portfolio in a given year? That's your return. And what's the other one, Corey?
So you're setting me up, because I'm a little heated about this, right? So when it comes to a plan, are you doing things by design or by default? At the end of the day, like, did you know why your portfolio or why your investments went down this week, and how to control that risk, right? So standard deviation is a way that we look at that. And the way to look at that, at least the way that I think about it in my simple mind, is think of it, you know, like the weather channel, right? Like, if you live in Florida, what's the chances you're going to see a huge fluctuation? You're probably not going to see a lot of, you know, it's going to be 80 degrees, maybe 82, maybe 76, right? But you go up to a place like Colorado or Montana, it could be 80 one day, it could be negative 30 the next day, right? You're going to have more volatility or more range. So there's greater risk that you'll freeze your butt off in Montana than you will in Florida.
Promise.
All right?
So true statement.
You could even look at it from, you know, am I conservative, aggressive? You know, we don't like using those kind of monitors, but, you know, why do people move to Florida? They don't want to see the volatility in the weather anymore,
yeah.
Right?
They're
so
done with the winters.
As people get older and as they start retiring, well, maybe their portfolios are moving from Montana to Florida, right? That's the way I think about it. But it all comes down to standard deviation and how you measure that. And if you don't have a good grasp on that, you need to sit down with somebody who knows how to explain that to you. Because when you're retired and you need a 6% return and you're telling them, hey, I want to see a 10 to 15% range, you have a definitive, measurable idea of what your portfolio is going to do year after year because you've defined it. And that's modern portfolio theory, and that's what,
you 101, know, it's what we kick out the exactly. first day you sit down with us.
Well, we got to set up a call, and then we're going to have to go into a short information timeout. So let me bring on John here.
Hey, John.
John St. Augustine, how are you today?
Good. Yes, I just had a question.
Sure.
So I'm a Twitter stockholder, and there was some news just Friday that a Elliott Management, a big activist investor, took out a chunk and was wanting to get rid of the CEO, and the stock went up. I was curious, what your is that a good thing? What would I expect to see going forward?
Yeah.
So we do have to take that information time out.
Take a break.
John,
sorry, John.
So we will be right back to address that question.
And I'm all over it.
All right, guys. So we're going to take a short information time out here. You are listening to News 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's News and Talk. Smart Money Time is now 10:44. And the lines are open. It is, the number is 855-765-1045. Once again, that's 855-765-1045. Did we know? So the S&P 500's performance, do you know what it was during and after the bubonic pneumonic plague of 1994?
I'll say that five times fast.
I can't. I won't even try.
Negative 10.
Ooh, so not close.
Okay.
We'll talk about it after the break.
Oh, yeah.
I like this song.
What is that? That
Caddyshack, baby.
All right, Jacksonville, welcome back. You're on 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's News and Talk, and you're listening to Smart Money. Smart Money time is now 10:49. And did you know? So in 1994, during the first 6 months of the bubonic pneumonic plague outbreak, there we go. How about that? Rolling right off the tongue. In India, the S&P 500 was actually up 8.2%.
Missed it.
And when the plague concerns were contained in September of that year, the S&P went even higher, up 26.3%.
Yeah, a little lift. Not bad. So they did all right.
Yep. And we're going to go ahead and
let's go back to John.
Yep. John, with your question on Twitter.
Do you want me to repeat it or you got it?
No, I think we got it. I mean, so obviously Twitter has been under siege for quite a while. I mean, it's absolutely been an acquisition target for so many people. You know, the activist is absolutely going after him simply because they just said that he's had such a lack of focus on profitability that they want to get somebody in there that's going to be more driven on that. So that's obviously a good sign from a company perspective that they're going to focus more on the profitability side of things. Also, they also have three board seats that are actually going to be coming available as well. So there's a almost a, to an extent of a regime change a little bit. So, you know, if you have a drag of Dorsey, who was basically just not focusing on what they wanted, it's obviously going to have a pretty good push. Now, who they're going to put in place, there's no word on that yet. But, you know, we're continuing to look at it. So does that answer your question?
Thank you. Yeah, I guess the only other thing, is this a positive or negative? That's really
I think as a positive, if you get a CEO in there that's looking at profitability, looking to just have better margins, it can't be a negative for the business. Who they're going to put in is going to be a huge, huge interest on how profitable they'll be. But it sounds like it's a good thing.
All right, John. Any other questions on that?
That'll do it.
All right. Thanks, John.
Thank you. God bless. All right. Next, we got Wayne in Jacksonville.
Hey, Wayne.
Good morning.
How are you doing today, sir?
What's your perspective on market volatility?
Well, I view it as opportunity, but you got to look at one, international events as well as national events.
Yeah.
You got to look at what's going on inside the markets, what the herd is going to do, mm-hmm. and if you can get out ahead of the herd, you know, I started off loading. For instance, I had AMD. I had between myself and family members that I invest their stuff for them. 20,000 shares of AMD. We started buying at $6 a share. Okay.
Yeah.
back way back, and it had gone to like two, and then it came up, and every time it met what I saw as a resistance as it crossed the 20 threshold, setting floors, it would auto sell, rebuy back at a much lower level, and as we ramped up, so we got more and more shares of it. Mm-hmm. And what I saw with the coronavirus was, okay, let me unload half of what we got at 55.
Yep.
And then phase in the rest based upon the market response, because you got to look at what the other people are doing, because it's going to affect what yours is. And, you know, I'm 66, but I'm a military retiree.
Thank you for your service.
Down my wife's. My wife, we put her in first, full retirement Social Security, and I take half of hers, and she just retired from teaching as well as I retired in June from teaching. And so this is kind of my full-time thing, doing the analysis. And, you know, we had AMD, Amazon, sold Amazon when it was almost, just as it falls off the spike, sold it, and I bought half of it back again yesterday at 1873.
Yeah. So Wayne, let me jump in on here for one second here. Yeah. So there's something that you're doing that's something that actually I do as an investor, and it's actually trying to.
Well, you're a trader when you do that.
And that's where I was going. It says there's a difference between trading the market and investing in the market. You know, a lot of folks out there don't know support levels, resistance, trends, simple moving averages. A lot of people don't know those things. So, you know, having a long-term investment approach is appropriate unless you're deep in the markets, you've done your research homework, you know what you're doing. Because at the end of the day, you know, you said something interesting. You said you bought AMD at 6 and then it dropped to 2. How many people out there are going to hold a 60% loss, right? I mean,
I'm also a techie and I understand the product that they're working on.
I'm with you on that because that's what I do.
It's what I do.
However, you know, you're trying to read the tea leaves. I mean, that's how I explain it. It's
and
like course
everybody else
right?
needs to know you can get them wrong just easily as you can get them
so,
right.
So, you know, ask
coupled with that, I also researched Intel and the other chip makers, and they were selling 14 nanometer chips. Everybody was.
Right.
They were working on 10 and they couldn't make them work. In fact, Intel still doesn't have the 10 nanometer chip working. And so AMD is gobbling up market share like crazy. And you know,
I mean, you're in one area of the market, which is great, and I commend you for doing such a great job with it. You know, we believe, you know, look at asset allocation, look at bigger things. Obviously, stocks can play a hand in that. But I'm sure you and I, Wayne, we could talk for hours on this technical trading, my friend.
I'm not a day trader. I trade.
You're a swing trader.
And I keep watching. Mm-hmm. It's more of opportunistic trading, but I also pay attention to all the geopolitical stuff, health-wise, everything.
Absolutely.
So on Monday, I'm going to jump back into Disney and pick up some more Amazon. And I'm also going to buy some Apple.
Awesome. We definitely appreciate your perspective there on the market. I think you are right. It is an opportunity for those that have the time and the ability to support the risk. So thank you, Wayne. God bless. Appreciate your comments.
Yes, sir.
Have a great day.
Yes, sir.
Take care.
All right. So we have probably time to set up one more, and then we're going to have to cut out for the – it's already the end of the first hour.
I know.
Hour.
It's crazy. It's
How about
by.
That? So let's go ahead and bring Gary Southside on. We'll get you set up.
Mr. Gary, how we doing?
Hey, guys. I was hoping not to get cut off by the news time, but I look as if speak. I just wanted to touch base.
Gary,
we're losing
you. You're breaking up, Gary. Okay.
Sorry, Gary.
I think we lost Gary.
Yep. All right. You want to get with Don real quick, and then we'll catch on the back, or we got to take a break?
Well, we're going to go ahead and set Don up from the St. Augustine Real Estate Values Relative to Market.
Mr.
Yep,
Don.
That's me.
How we doing, Don?
Doing great.
Good.
I'm a little bit concerned. The last time I delved into real estate was in 06.
Oh, gosh. Your timing's impeccable.
It was. It dropped.
Sure.
Horrible timing. and I've just got an offer accepted on another piece, and I'm hoping I'm not going to get the same thing.
I could talk quite in depth here. So is your concern that just with what's going, and I know we got to take a break.
Yep.
So is your concern just around market values and how they're going to play out, or what is the question, I guess?
Market values. I'm buying this to rehabilitate.
Okay. Well, right. we can easily talk about that on the backside.
Perfect, Don. Appreciate the question. We'll be right back with you. Okay, guys and gals, we hit the top of the hour, or top of the new hour already. Can't believe it. So we have to take an information timeout. We're going to be bringing you up-to-date Fox National News, local weather, and traffic patterns. You are listening to News 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's News and Talk. And did we know? So what was the S&P 500's performance during and after the 2003 and 2004 SARS epidemic?
Oh, it didn't move much. It was back within like a month. I'm going to guess 20%.
Ooh. You're not that far off. We'll talk about it on the other side, though.
This is the WOKV Ask the Experts Weekend, discussing things that matter most to you. Local experts answering your questions. Call 855-765-1045. That's 855-765-1045. Now, Smart Money on 104.5 WOKV. Here's your host, Hank Madden, Mike Ellis, and Corey Schrader.
And good morning, Jacksonville. Welcome back to 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's News and Talk. This is Smart Money Live, Hour 2, and Smart Money time is 11:06. So for Hour 2, we'll be picking right back up with Don, and then I have two special guests here with us today that'll be joining us in the second hour. It's Billy Tucker and Dean Black, who's the chairman of the GOP here in Duval County. How are you guys doing today?
Doing great. Good morning.
Morning.
We're doing super. It's a great day. It's beautiful in Jacksonville.
Perfect. Yes, and then, as always, the lines are still open in this second hour. That number is 855-765-1045. 855-765-1045. And the did you know? So in 2003 and 2004, during the first 6 months of the SARS epidemic, the S&P 500 was up 14.59%. And in the 12 months after SARS epidemic, the S&P was up 20.76.
I was right.
So you are almost dead on with that. SARS infected about 8,100 people worldwide, and 774 were claimed.
Okay. Well, I know we need to get back to Don, and then we got our guests here. So let's get back to Don. Hey, Don, you still with us?
Don, thank you for holding over that break.
Well, thank you.
All right. So real estate. So, you know, in my opinion, you know, the game has a little bit changed since what happened in 2007, 2008. You know, the prices are relatively high. You know, interest rates are remarkably low. Chances are they're going to go even lower. So, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it all depends on what you're using the investment property for. I mean, if you're looking to gather rent and income from it, chances are you're probably going to have a pretty good return on investment through that, because rental continues to go up and up and up, and people aren't necessarily buying homes. You will see some of the values start to probably, I don't want to say peak, but almost normalize a little bit, because I'm sure you've driven around Jacksonville. There's tons of new supply coming out, so people are going to have
that. My concern is the market going down.
I don't see
so. This particular property we're buying to rehab it and flip it.
Yeah, no, I don't see the, from what I look at consistently on the real estate market, I don't see that happening, because we don't have people that are completely over-leveraged like they were back in 2008. I mean, there was a guy I knew before the plumbing went into his new house, he already refinanced and bought a new one. We're not seeing those types of things, plus interest rates are at really, really low places. So I don't foresee any of that happening. Now, you know, let's look at the global economy. If things slow down, we start going through recession, you know, what's the likelihood that people are going to walk away from their homes? And it's not as high of a probability as it once was back in 06. So my take is I think things are normalized. I don't think you have much to be concerned about, but there's always an outside risk.
Yeah, that was my take. Yep. There's always a risk in everything, but
of course,
kind of my feeling on it anyway.
Yeah, I think you're
all right, well,
you're good.
Thank you so much for your opinion.
Yeah, perfect, Don.
Thanks, Don.
Thank you. God bless, my friend.
All right.
So Like I said before, we do have some special guests with us here today. Woo. So we got two veterans on the show. We're all proud citizens. So, of course, it is an election year.
Really?
A big one.
A big one.
We are going to have one. You've probably heard about it.
So what are we doing locally? What's
Dean, what are...
Oh, nothing. Nothing.
Well, actually, quite a lot of something.
Okay.
Duval County is likely to be ground zero in the upcoming presidential election. Well, okay. You've heard Florida is a fairly important state.
Always, yeah.
No, we're not.
We just had midterm elections, which both went to recounts. And the Democrats have been pouring resources into Duval County. They've been pouring it into the state generally, but Duval County in particular, with a view toward flipping Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. Do you know, Jacksonville is the only major city left in America that is under Republican governance. And I mean by that, uniform Republican governance. You have a few Republican mayors here and there, or a few city councils that are Republican. But as far as a real Republican city, we're the last man standing.
Okay. So you're talking about metropolises or?
Major markets. And they have focused their efforts here. And I must say, with a lot of success, they have registered a lot of voters. So we are under a strategic political assault, if you will. They have registered 19,000 voters, and the Republican Party is gearing up to confront that because we just decided a couple of elections here in the midterm by less than 1% of the vote.
Actually, Dean, just this week, Mike Bloomberg poured more money into Florida, into Duval County, to register more voters on their side.
That's right. And we've been dealing with George Soros-funded efforts here since really the end of 2015.
Wow.
They showed up here back then with more than 20 paid field staffers, and they've just poured steady resources into it ever since.
Wow. Well,
and Dean, they've been successful.
What are you guys doing, and what can those listeners that want to jump on the wagon and help out, what can they do?
Well, we need volunteers. We need volunteers. You can go to DuvalGOP.com. You can go to our Facebook page, Republican Party of Duval County, and you can volunteer. You can also contribute there. Both things are necessary. And we have been ramping up political operations here now for quite some time and very successfully. We've opened up a field office. We have several other field offices that we'll be opening very soon. We have trained, I think, over 300 volunteers so far.
Okay.
We are doing major voter registration efforts ourselves. And you know, we are not going to let the Democrats just take over Jacksonville, right?
Nope.
No. And actually, I think if there are business owners that are listening, if there are people that are involved in their churches that are listening, we need to go where the people are to actually register some of these voters. So if you're a business owner, invite us in and we'll come and register your employees. And if you're a church member, ask your pastor to let us come in and sign up new voters as well. We've got to go where the people are. And there are a lot of people in Duval County. So I want to tell you one thing. Charlie Kirk, do you guys know who he is? He's with Turning Point USA.
I've heard the name.
Yeah, he's an incredible young man, and he's done some really cool things. He posted something on Twitter today, and I think this is pretty phenomenal for us. But he said that the Florida population is 21 million people. New York is 20 million. And he said the Florida budget is around 177 million. New York is 348 billion. Anyway, everything that we do half of what they do. They spend more money than we do, and we have actually more people than they do. And do you know what it also said? That our schools and our economy is stronger than New York. Mr. Bloomberg wants to make every state like New York. Every Democrat wants to make every state like New York. So we've really got to get out and make sure these Democrats don't win. They can't win.
I got a question on that. So I remember back in 2000 when there was all that vote or die stuff and all the, you know, the things that were going around the colleges. Like they're signing up all these people, but what's the likelihood that they actually show up?
That's a very good question. That's a very good question. Okay, so in the world of voter registration, we know that the greatest likelihood of a person to vote in their life is in the election that's immediately after they first register to vote.
Because they're excited about it.
They're excited about it. They registered. They want to see what this is all about. While I would like to say that the registrations that the Democrats have effected here in Duval County are not showing up to vote, the truth is that's just not true.
Really?
Okay. No, they have actually turned out voters in increasing percentages in the preceding two elections. So we have our work cut out for us. We need to do a good job.
Yep. And that's what I was curious. I mean, at the end of the day, it's like, okay, if we assume that it's not going to happen and we don't show up, what is that going to look like moving forward? Is
there a bloodbath.
So,
that's what it's going to look like.
Do we got to take a break?
Yeah, we got to take a short information timeout. So you are listening to News 104.5 WOKV. We're going to take a short timeout. We'll be right back with more of your financial questions and also a little bit more from our guests here. So time is now 11:15. Did you know? So can you guess the S&P 500's performance during and after the 2006 avian flu outbreak?
Bird flu. 10%.
Positive or negative?
Yes.
We'll talk about it after the break. Jacksonville, welcome back to 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's news and talk. You're listening to Smart Money, and the Smart Money time is now 11:19. Did you know? So, in 2006, during the first 6 months of the avian flu outbreak, the S&P 500 was up 11.66%.
I am on it
You're
today.
So close. In the 12 months after the avian flu outbreak, the S&P was up 18.36.
Nice.
So pretty respectable. Pretty respectable.
Not too bad.
Well, folks, just so you know, lines are open, and the number here is 855-765-1045. So call and call now. That number, once again, is 855-765-1045. Call in with your financial questions.
Yeah. And even if you have some questions while we got our guests on here, please call in if you have any questions around how to get involved. You know, how can you just, you know, make sure that we're still focused on the right thing moving forward. Definitely call in.
Yep. So, like I said, it's civic duty for everybody to get out there and cast their vote. It's your fault if you don't like the like the results and you didn't do anything.
We have, you know, we've been talking about how important the upcoming election is, and you know, Republicans and Democrats have been arguing about the same things forever. We've been arguing about more government, less government. They would argue about abortion good, abortion bad. There were certain things we've been arguing about for 50 years. Those arguments have fundamentally changed now. We are not arguing about the same things we used to.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now we're not talking about abortion anymore. They're talking about actually killing kids after they're born.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about more government, less government. They straight up say they're socialists now.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about more or less immigration. They just say, let's have no border. Everything is changed. The debate is fundamentally changed. And if you don't want to take the risk of having, look, the Democrat Party has become a sort of national temper tantrum now. It's hard to argue that they're really even a real political party. They surely must not be trusted with power to govern. But that is a thing that you have to work toward. They are registering voters in great numbers in Florida, and we have to do that too. If you support Donald Trump, if you support American free enterprise, if you support the American dream, are you registered to vote? If you're not, then you need to go do that right now.
Mm-hmm. You know, this is so true, Dean, because this, when we talked earlier about this is the biggest election of our lifetime, you're right. And you know why? It's not between Republicans and Democrats. It's between America and socialism. And that is what it is. There is no difference right now. So if you're going to vote for a Democrat, you're voting for socialism, which in turn always turns into communism. So right now, if you don't vote Republican, you're voting for socialism. That's what you're voting for. So it's not Republicans and Democrats.
So I got a quick question on that. So let's say that Sanders gets a nomination. Don't you think that it's so polarizing that most people will say, yeah, that's insane? And just, it's almost like a sure win for Trump as a result of that.
Many people will say that's insane. You'll say that's insane. I'll say that's insane. But let me just point out in the midterm election, mm-hmm. we had Andrew Gillum running yep. for governor, and he himself was backed by the Democratic Socialists of America. He ran as a socialist. You do realize he won Duval County, right? By 17,000 votes, and it went to a recount. It was a coin toss, statistically speaking. So the idea that Bernie cannot win, I'm sorry, that's just not credible. The data mm-hmm. and empirical history doesn't bear that out. I like the contrast. Look, yeah. I would pay big money to watch Donald Trump debate Bernie Sanders. I want to watch that debate.
I was going to say, I don't think we might not have to pay to see that. That might actually just happen.
I don't I'm going to throw a bomb here, but I don't think that the Democrats are going to let him become their candidate.
Well, that's what I'm getting
at. He's just not. Yeah. I mean, he's just too polarizing for them. So we'll see what happens to Bernie here.
Because it affects a lot of people. It's not, I mean, it affects billionaires, millionaires, affects common people.
Well, Bloomberg is buying this election.
Just to kind of tie
buying
it back
the Democratic
in.
Platform. That's what he's going to do.
Do not write off Bernie.
Yep. Oh, I'm not. You got to feel the burn.
Right now, he looks poised to win Texas on Super Tuesday. He looks like he looks like the front runner. Mm-hmm. And he looks like he could actually pull this off. Now, you've got Bloomberg coming on strong. Biden's trying to get it wind in his sails again. But there were some changes made after the last Democrat primary, and the superdelegates do not get to vote in the initial round. Mm. They only come in after the first round of voting. So if he can come in and cobble together a little over 1,800 Democrat delegates at the convention, right. he could actually be your nominee. That could actually happen.
Yeah, and from an economic perspective, again, the biggest concern is what is that going to do for pro-growth? What is that going to do for just overall capitalism and CEOs.
The coronavirus isn't the only concern out there this year. Of course, this is one of the big concerns, too, is, hey, it's an election year, and look at the folks that are putting their names in the ring. Mm-hmm. Yep. So it's not like that's totally isolated. The question becomes, what like we were talking about before, what can we do? How do we get moving
now
on this?
Hear this. Florida is the largest purple state. No one thinks there's a reasonable path to victory for President Trump without winning Florida. So everyone is focused on this state.
Right.
And right now you have about 5.04 million Democrats against 4.79 million Republicans. And of course, you've got 3.7 or so million independents in the mix. It's a very, very tight affair. All across Florida right now, there's a mad scramble in every county to register as many voters for your side as you possibly can. And there are a lot of those out there. If you're registered to vote, birds of a feather flock together. You probably think everybody's registered. They're not. There are lots of people who are not registered, and everyone is trying to make sure that on Election Day, they show up with the largest number of people qualified to cast a ballot as possible.
And you know what? The Dems are really good at getting their people out to vote. I mean, they rent buses and go through neighborhoods and pick people up and take them. We have to do the same thing. You know, if you've got friends, family members, neighbors, you got to make sure that you're reaching out to them and saying, did you vote? Are you voting? And make sure they do.
Right.
You know, because what happens too, we think we got it. We can never think we have it in the bag. We can't. And right now, think about this. We've got like Donna Deegan, who was she was supporting Gillum here. Now Gillum is supporting her. Bloomberg is supporting her. She's running against our representative, John Rutherford, who is a great conservative here in the House, right? So we have to be out here making sure every single person votes.
Absolutely. Well, we got a hard break coming up here in just a moment, but before we go, I want to bring on Gary, who's calling in with the Kung Flu virus.
I like how that's
carrying, Gary from Southside, how are you doing today?
Hey, sorry, round two, man. I must have had a bad connection earlier.
No worries.
No worries. So we got to set up your question, and then we got to go to a quick break. So go ahead.
Well, quick tip for everybody. Invest in whoever makes Corona beer, because after this thing blows up, there's a lot of Corona parties. But everyone needs to do their history lesson and go back like the bubonic plague in the 13th century. I mean, all this stuff forms in Asia for the most part. And that's why Donald Trump said, we knew this thing was coming, months ago, because it comes in on ships just like the plague did. I'm a former crane operator on ocean-going vessels. I've worked with these cats my whole life. And you would be surprised how nasty these other countries can operate, and sure. These germs right over here, and that's why these diseases are so crazy to everyone, because no one knows where they're at because the filth these people live in and what they eat.
Mm-hmm. Well, I kind of attest to it a little bit when I was actually doing the culinary thing. There's certain standards and things that we have to maintain, and I've been, and this is not to knock Orlando, but there's been plenty of Vietnamese restaurants I went in. It's not air conditioned. You got tilapia swimming in tanks in the front. So I mean, it's just a different cultural experience.
But here's the thing. Now check this out, guys. I know you got to go to a break.
Yep. Yeah.
Don't think now America has been had a lack of manufacturing jobs for the better part of NAFTA started back in Clinton's days. Don't you think now that this is going to scare the you-know-what at a lot of people is buying stuff that's made in China or countries that are seriously affected? This thing turns into a pandemic. Don't you think this could kickstart manufacturing back in America?
Absolutely. You hit it. You nailed it. I think this is an opportunity for America.
I don't know if I agree with that, actually.
Well, actually,
we got to take a break.
We got to take the break. We got to take the break, but we're definitely going to pick that thought up on the other side. So you're listening to News 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's News and Talk. Smart Money time is now 11:29. We're going to bring you some Fox National News, local weather, traffic patterns, and did we know?
What do we know?
So, what did the S&P 500's performance during and after the swine flu pandemic look like?
I don't know.
I got you.
You
we'll
got
talk
me.
About it after the break. Jacksonville, welcome back to 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's News and Talk. You're listening to Smart Money, and the time is now 11:35. The lines are open, so call and call now. Number is 855-765-1045. Once again, that number is 855-765-1045. Did you know? In 2009, during the first 6 months of the swine flu pandemic, the S&P 500 was up 18.72%. And then in the 12 months after the swine flu pandemic was contained, it was up 35.96%. Part of that was due to the recovery in 2008, though. So, caveat
there. Grain of salt.
The exact figures reported across the globe weren't reported across the globe, but that particular strain, swine flu, was basically a slight variation on the 1918 version.
Oh, okay.
It was pretty big. 700 to 1.4 billion, somewhere in there, were infected.
Nice. So. Okay. So who do we got on the lines
we're
here?
We're bringing Gary back on. Gary, we were talking right before the break about the state of
manufacturing
and health in other countries versus here and what it all means.
Yeah.
Well, everything's gravy. And I think one thing for note, I was thinking to myself during the break, Trump's been pimping the farmers, and now he should be on a pedestal because chicken futures, and look, I've dealt with, we export a lot of frozen chicken, especially to Russia. They can't, some of these countries with large, large populations, as you well know as economists, can't afford to feed themselves or don't have the means to do it. There's not enough to go around.
Mm-hmm.
So we export more than we feed ourselves. That's the benefit of living in America. We've always been helping everybody else out. So if I had money to invest, I'd say chicken futures are going to be way up.
Well, I don't know if I'd go to chicken futures, but you did make an interesting comment about manufacturing before the break. And, for years and years.
Why can't we make our own T-shirts anymore, guys? Why can't we? I mean, I know it's
there's stuff, nothing wrong with that, though.
We got a whole bunch of guys sitting in prison doing life sentences that will never get out. How come they can't make shoes? You know, I'm serious. I know it sounds cruel.
Privatize.
You know, maybe it's the stepping stone.
Well, an interesting comment on that, though. So we did more or less chase some of the manufacturing base here in America out. To outsource, get lower costs, things like that. The idea was, hey, look, we'd rather, we were talking about a little bit over the break, we'd rather be the ones that design the car than build it. Mm-hmm. Those tend to be higher paying jobs, things
cheaper
like that.
Cheaper input costs.
Cheaper input costs, so you get lower prices for the consumer.
I mean, could you imagine if we did the electronics for the iPhone here, you'd pay probably $2,000-$3,000 for a phone.
We already do. What are you talking about?
Well, I don't agree with you on that. I really don't. If you incentivize and make it beneficial to the people who grow up here to make the phones here, I mean, if we import all the stuff, we could make this stuff. I'm telling you, man, the raw materials, 90% of them are already here.
So I'm just curious, if that's the case, why are companies shipping stuff overseas and then shipping it back? I mean, these people have absolutely tried to squeeze as much juice out of that lemon as possible, and that's why we're seeing these things.
Slave labor, two words. Slavery.
Okay, so is that on us or is that on another country?
Oh, well, other countries, 75% of the world. I mean, you understand, man, we have a high standard of living here. Most places, and I've traveled, I've been to every continent except for Africa and Antarctica.
Okay.
I've met people from just about every country in the world. The standard of living over there is hand to mouth.
Sure.
The easiest way to put it. Here we have, you know, what are you doing next Thursday for dinner? Mm-hmm. that mentality does not exist in the rest of the world.
I can second that thought.
Yeah.
Afghanistan. That's exactly right. Dirt floors. Yeah.
You know, I mean, we have animals as pets here. They keep them as food.
Sure.
Okay. I mean, you know, even though we're in the 21st, 22nd century, depending on what calendar you're going on, you know, the world should be in a more advanced state, but yet seems to me the depravity is becoming more and more mundane, just becoming archaic. And us educated people are going the way of the dodo bird because we're being marginalized because it's like the Bolsheviks. If you stick your head above water, someone's there to crack you on the head to put you back underneath.
Well, let's go back. All right, let's go back to where we were, which is we were talking about manufacturing.
Exactly.
I think we can all agree that we would love to see manufacturing that should be here.
Yes.
Here again. And we can acknowledge that there are some things it's probably not going to make sense to manufacture here. And we had talked during the break about the wisdom of not having China be the manufacturer for the whole world.
Yep.
Right.
From a strategic point of view, that makes no sense. That makes vulnerabilities, mm-hmm. not just for this country, but for the world. And so what we're seeing now is a migration of many of those manufacturing jobs to other countries in the Pacific Rim, and I'm sure some here also.
Absolutely.
Well, you guys
should know this, because I've been keeping tabs with the economic report. Over the last year or so, ever since China's been trying to take over everything, like in the South China Sea, like countries like Vietnam, even Myanmar, which is a military dictatorship.
Gary, we're definitely of same mind on many of the points. And I think the main point to get across is there are some things that would make sense to bring back, which is what the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was kind of about. And then there are some things that we'd rather hold over.
They're trying to take the jobs from China to take the place of Chinese manufacturers, these countries who've been violated by China, and these are Asian countries.
Yep.
And they're done with it too. So I think when this is all said and done, I think the world is going to be behind us, and China is going to have to really reorganize itself from top to bottom. And Xi Jinping might not want to be dictator for life. I wouldn't want to be in his shoes right now.
We definitely appreciate
the call and the commentary. You know, got to go ahead and get on with another call. Thank you so much. God bless for calling in today. And we're going to go ahead and set up the next call, Eric, with Jacksonville Precious Metals, and then we're going to have to go into a break after we set you up, my friend.
Hey, Eric, how we doing?
All right. Hey, guys, how's it going?
Going well.
Hey, guys, love your show. I love turning on Saturdays and not having other guys talking and then I hear your voices. And I'm like, oh, okay, I'm going to stay on the radio. So yeah, nice program. I like it.
Put a smile on someone's face. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah. Hey, you know, it's two things. 401k with my company, it's been doing really well over the past couple, 3 years, obviously. Yep. And it's just funny to see the emails from the company that manages the 401k and then the company that I pay for advice to manage it. Sending out emails just kind of quelling the concern I guess people have and saying stay on the long term. Mm-hmm. You can comment on that, but also sure. I invest in precious metals, mostly silver, some gold.
Okay.
And I'm just wondering your thoughts at times like this about the place of precious metals in your portfolio. I'll let you guys go with that.
Awesome. Okay. Great
Absolutely.
Question, Eric.
Perfect setup. We'll catch that on the other side. We have to take a short information timeout, folks. You're listening to News 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville News and Talk. Smart Money time is 11:44. Did you know what was the S&P 500's performance during and after the 2013 Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome or MERS epidemic?
Did anyone notice?
That's an interesting comment. We'll talk about it shortly after the break. Jacksonville, welcome back to Smart Money on 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's News and Talk. Smart Money time is now 11:48. Did you know? In 2013, during the first 6 months of the Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome, or MERS epidemic, the S&P 500 was up 10.74%. And in the 12 months following the MERS epidemic, after the MERS epidemic, the S&P returned 17.96. You were right, it's very small. It was 1,329 confirmed cases.
Yeah, I don't even remember hearing about it, so I was so curious.
Same thing, caused a big concern, and then suddenly it wasn't. Eric, before we get to you, our guests have one final announcement before they hop off. So I want to go ahead and let you guys put that out there. You said there was an event coming up? Bill?
Yes. Yeah. On March 24th, Brandon Straka, who is the guy behind the Walk Away campaign, he was a strong liberal Democrat, and he got fed up, couldn't believe how the information he was finding out about how they had treated and lied to him. So he started this whole movement, and he's going to be here in Jacksonville on March the 24th, giving a public speech, and it's hosted by the Duval County GOP. So the information, if you'll just follow us on social media at Duval County GOP, that'll give you more information as time comes. But March 24th, Brandon Straka, the walk-away guy, he's going to be here.
Nice. Oh,
perfect. We appreciate you guys for joining us. Dean, do you have anything to add before?
Go to DuvalGOP.com. Pay attention to what we're doing and pay attention to what's happening in Duval County. In Duval County, the Democrats are here in force, and we're building an organization that's going to deal with that, but we can't do it alone. We need your help. And if we don't change this dynamic, if we don't change the trajectory here, not only do we jeopardize the presidential election, but we will also jeopardize the ability to elect Republicans in the city itself in 2023. So we've all got to pay attention to that. Hey, we've got a South Carolina primary going on right now.
Yep.
They're going to select, I think, 54 delegates today in South Carolina. Then all eyes will be on Super Tuesday coming up. We've got 16 states and territories. They'll select about 1,300 delegates then. And then all eyes will turn to Florida for our primary. And there will be 248, I believe, delegates here
just
in Florida.
That's March 17th.
Everything is going to coalesce. Everything is going to ramp up many notches in just the next couple of weeks. The level of excitement, the level of intensity, it's going to ramp up everywhere. Again, you need to cast about in your circle of friends, everywhere you know, in your church, in your work. Find out who's not registered to vote, and let's get them registered to vote.
All right.
Sounds good, Dean. Thank you.
Thank you, Dean. Thank you, Billy, for joining
us
today.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, absolutely. So back to Mr. Eric.
Yep. So, Eric, we were talking a little bit before the break about precious metals, and you had a question about hey, what should I do in that space?
Yeah, or was it more of, hey, what's going on? What was kind of the thought?
Yeah. Well, two things. My 401k, like I said, has been doing well, and I'm getting all these emails from both the company that manages it and the company that I pay to help me decide where to put the money in the fund.
The 401k, yeah.
Kind of quelling us, going, hey, guys, long term, blah, blah, blah. I want you to comment on that. And then also, I've always invested in precious metals, mostly silver, some gold, and physical precious metals. I was wondering your take on that, especially in a time like this, where that plays in someone's portfolio. And I understand that precious metals, you have to store it, you have to keep it. There's obviously the issues of possible theft and stuff like that. And I just wanted your take on that, especially in an environment that we have today financially with the questions and the uncertainty in the market.
Yeah, so I can touch on the gold and the silver first. And again, there's many different types and ways that you can invest in these types of things. So I'll address, holding the actual physical gold and all that. That's a little bit different than what actually occurred over this Friday, because the gold market was actually down about 5%. So what happened? And again, this is going back to the emotional side of selling. Basically, what happened is there was forced selling from equity investors who actually sold their gold positions at the same time to just basically cover their losses in equities. But what happened is it started triggering margin calls, and when it started doing that, then you had to have people start covering those calls. So it was almost to the point where you had perpetual selling to cover themselves. They didn't want to sell, but they were forced to cover their losses in other asset classes. Yeah. So it's one of those things where, like back in 2008 and 2009, everything was just sold, and we'll worry about the things later. That's why treasuries have been doing amazing over the last 7-8 months, is because we have this fear or this just constant run to safety without any thoughts on what's the long-term play. And even more completely, more of an issue here is that we've removed all trading costs from everything as well. So you go to any brokerage firm, at least you thought, hey, I got to pay $8, $12, $20 to be able to sell something. Now it's zero. And there's nothing stopping anyone from getting in, getting out, and trying to time this thing. And we tell people all the time, look, 90% of your returns come from your asset allocation. Market timing, stock selection, what you put your money in.
7%
total. It's like 7%. So you're spending majority of your time focusing on 7% when there's this ocean of return out there that we focus on, and it's all based off of risk and return that you want to take on. So at the end of the day, from my perspective, gold is something you should hold as a counterbalance. It's a counterweight. We hold usually about 2-3% at
most. Our portfolios, we usually have about a 3. I wouldn't tread too much over about 5.
Yeah, I think five is much. But when it comes to gold, my thing is there's no industrial use. It's a faction of value. So you have to find someone who's going to pay you more than what you paid for it. And there's really, again, there's no industrial use like silver or copper or palladium, something that you could use there.
Yeah.
So, it's like diamonds. I mean, I think there's some use there, but at least that's on the commodity side. Now, as far as the 401k goes, I'm actually kind of curious, what was kind of the thought or question within that comment? Because, you're going to get everyone's opinion, right? Like at the end of the day, hey, I think you should stay long term. Yeah. Every investor that I've always worked with, you want to keep people
every investment company. We had funds contacting us as an investment advisor saying, what are you guys worried about right now? Let's talk.
I think it's
people I didn't do anything because I know I'm in this for the long term, both with gold and silver and my 401k. But I think some people were starting to sell because you can tie, there is an option to tie a 401k to a brokerage side instead of just the and I think some people are jumping in panicking. So these emails came out, not necessarily to me, but to everybody that is invested in our company, 401k, saying, just kind of quelling it. I just wanted your take on it because I find it humorous that people knee jerk and run and do that.
Well,
I personally see this as you have cash in the bank, time to buy.
But dead on because you've heard me say it before. I've said it on air. I say it to clients. This is the only industry in the world where when something goes on sale, everybody runs away with their hands in the air screaming.
Yeah. But here's something else, you know, and I try to look at it from this perspective, right? Everyone has a time clock, right? When it comes to their investments, they have a certain floor on their actual value, right? If you're 3 years from retirement right now and that market just, you know, started trending down, am I going to work another 6 months because this market's about to remove it? Like, how emotional are you about that, right? If you have 10, 15 years mentally, it's not a big deal. You know, in what we try to explain to clients all the time, and again, we do have day jobs, as Hank likes to explain, is we help clients through this, right? There's an emotional and a logical answer, and I tell everybody this. You know, when you retire, you don't stop investing. You still need to invest. So if you have a short-term time horizon, you're going to press that panic button right away. And if you don't see what you're looking for, you're gonna have more inclination to just, you know, worry about that later, because I don't want to lose $30,000 because that means that's another year of income. Does that make sense?
It's funny, I can see it. You know, I pull up my 401k, I haven't looked at it in probably a month or two, and it's dropped like, you know, 60 grand. I'm like, okay, yeah. I see where somebody would panic, especially if they're close to retirement.
Sure.
You know,
and my, it's funny, I was bowling last night, my father-in-law looks at me, he goes, so how's things going? And I'm like, how'd you know I'd do the market? No, he was like, what would you do? I'm like, you need to look at your account. And I know we got to take a break, Mike.
Well, it's not break. We're coming up to the end of it.
We're coming up to the end. Sorry. So anyway, what I said to him is like, look at it. Don't run away from it. If you do not know where the risk is and what you're dealing with, how are you measured? So I would tell everyone out there to go ahead and do that. But great questions, Eric. Thanks for letting me talk about it.
Thank you, Eric, for your call.
God bless. All right. So, folks, 2 hours flew by.
Jeez.
So I got to say, God bless you. Thank you for joining us today. We appreciate you and your calls. If nobody said that they cared about you today, know that Corey, Scotty, and I do.
And Hank.
But he's, you know, he called in today. Always remember, the most important investment that you can ever make can't be found on a statement or balance sheet anywhere. It's that special time that you spend with your friends, family, and loved ones. And to our American soldiers, sailors, Marines, airmen, and your families, our warriors, thank you and God bless you for what you do and the sacrifices you're willing to make. You protect our American way of life, our free country, that we can live undominated by some tyrannical socialist or communist government. And to our first responders, our police officers, firemen, EMTs, and your families, thank you and God bless you for providing us safe cities. You have our backs and keep us covered, and you do so at the potential risk of your lives as well. Thank you for all that you do. And this day is a special day given to you by our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. So try and spend some of your time, talents, or treasures to serve those around you and show them His grace. Fathers, you'll never stand as tall as when you kneel in prayer, and teach your children to pray. They're not going to learn it anywhere else. Always stand tall and honor and respect our flag. It's the symbol of all the sacrifices that came before to free nations, eradicate slavery, promote equality and justice, and wipe away poverty. Even now, she needs us pushing forward her principles, perhaps now more than ever. God bless, my friends. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.